Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
I like that promo during the break about us going to Detroit.
Yeah, man. It's not far away. It's not that far away. It's a week from Thursday that we're in Detroit, dude.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
And I've never been on a road trip with you and Shane in Porth.
That's true.
How about the whole bathroom thing?
You're very concerned about one bathroom.
Are you not?
In the Airbnb.
Well, looky here, Chad. For the entire period you in my room, I better not catch you standing up peeing. You sit down when you pee, you understand?
Four grown men in a four-bedroom house with one bathroom?
Yeah, it's not a great idea.
I thought that it was what the old-timers used to call cabin fever, kind of claustrophobic reaction which can occur when people are shut in together over long periods of time.
I'm not blaming Ryan for booking the wrong one.
I'll go ahead and blame Ryan.
No, it's not his fault.
I know.
Ryan Parth, look at Ryan Parth and Shane Reardon sitting down, and they both got beards. Look at those guys. Ryan Parth.
I think it is. I think it qualifies.
It's no one's fault other than everybody's.
Well, I mean, Porth, he comes from Nashville.
Right, where everything is much slower.
Yeah, and I believe he just had, like, a horse and buggy there, right? I don't believe he owned him when he lived down
that's
there.
That's why he was fine. He was like, one bathroom.
That's so many.
that's one more than I grew up with.
Is there a light in there?
Okay, that's okay, because making a happy home isn't like flipping on a light switch.
The light switch?
Our house is a very, very, very fine house. With
one bathroom.
I couldn't believe how small a house.
One, two, three.
And here we go, Tim.
Here we go.
Here we go, Tim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
The countdown is on. There is intrigue about the 9th overall pick in the Chicago Bears and who will snap at who first with four members of the Score staff for two nights in Detroit.
My money's on Shane, but that's because he's dealing with a situation. No.
Are you staying both nights? Are you going to be there Friday night too in the house?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right, so we got
two nights together.
Two nights together.
Let's play
four
cards.
Four people, huh? One bathroom.
Four of us playing cards late into the night. Who's in?
That'd be fun.
Look at that. You're both in. I like it.
I'll do whatever.
All right.
Go out to a nice dinner, check out the draft, go back to the house, have some cocktails.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Exactly.
Just dreaming about Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze.
I do have a reservation for us on Friday night.
I know. Very excited about that. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be an excellent time.
Did we check? Are the Tigers are in town, right?
They are in town against the Royals that weekend.
They are in town against the Royals.
Yeah.
So Benetti owes Shane some tickets.
We have the Royals at home. I don't want you guys watching them.
That's true.
Appreciate it.
That's true. I get it. I get what you're saying.
Oh, now I see.
Now
that.
You got it.
I get it.
Let's wake up, everyone.
Yeah, let's perk up. Let's go.
All right, my bad.
Let's go.
Let's get to that Jed re-rack now.
let's get on Tanny's level here. That's my bad.
The Caleb Williams stuff is still happening, by the way, all over the internet. You saw the video that the guy put together the other day with, like, Caleb and the fake fashion video of Caleb as walking down onto the runway, and Caleb retweeted it and just kind of laughed at it and then teased, the way that you see my suit with my suit and my lady's dress.
Yeah, he says his outfit is going to be is a true one of one.
One of one.
And you know what? Good.
When you read that and said, wait till you see my suit and my lady's dress, I was like, oh, is he playing with this idea of him wearing a suit and a dress? No, he means his lady's dress.
That is
the lady's bringing.
I never thought of that for a second.
There was no apostrophe. So it was a punctuation misread.
Sure.
By me.
Yeah, no, he's saying his lady, his girlfriend, his date, whatever their status is, her dress is apparently going to be excellent.
Okay.
Good. His suit or outfit is just apparently going to be excellent.
Yeah, just saying, it was all right there. And then the there's still Commanders fans dreaming of the haul that the Bears are going to get in exchange with the Commanders for trading down. I saw a blog out there yesterday of like,
oh, that's adorable.
Oh, what a proposal. Proposal has the Commanders fans dreaming of Caleb. It's like, none of that is happening. None of that is happening.
No.
They've already started the install.
Yeah, he's hanging out with players on the Bears. They are he's met the coaches. They're doing stuff. Absolutely.
He's got the playbook. Like yeah. they've gone ahead and started offensive install with their prospective number one pick.
Yeah. This is
ship has left the port. Cow has left the barn.
Yeah, the port-a-potty.
The cow has left the port. The ship has also left the barn.
I think that's how the saying goes.
Yeah, nailed it.
Benjamin Solak does good work for the Ringer. Maybe people are sick and tired of this, but I am not at all sick and tired of national, respected, non-hot take people. These are like, you know, film nerd, analytic guru types looking at the Bears and be like, you know, pretty good.
The Bears might be entering the best era of Bears football here in a second. There's not no Rex Grossman we got coming down the hill now with Caleb Williams. All right? There's no Jay Cutler we got coming into the room. Caleb has a really good shot to be the best quarterback in Bears franchise history. It's always an unreasonable thing to say about rookies, but in the case of the Bears, it might actually be true. Caleb could, in his rookie season, become the first Bears quarterback to throw more than 30 passing touchdowns in a season. That's not unreasonable. That's not at all. If he starts 17 games, he absolutely should be able to pull that off. He's a fantastic, fantastic prospect. The Bears also have, obviously, you know, another top 10 pick, right? They have this 9 overall selection, which... Man, as this board has fallen, is it four quarterbacks go top six, four quarterbacks go top eight, that pick really could end. Like, we don't, oh, what if it's Roma Dunze? Dude, it might really just end up being Roma Dunze. Two picks in the top 10 going into a roster, Shield, going into a depth chart that, man, down the stretch last season. Back half last year, Chicago Bears playing some good football games, all right? Defensively, quality contributors across the board. Montez Sweat trade was good. Jalen Johnson took a step forward. The TJ Edwards signing was good. The Tremaine Edmonds signing, probably too expensive, but was still good. The Tyreek Stevenson draft pick. Like, they have dudes on defense. Offensive line, best it's been in years. The DJ Moore acquisition and the Keenan Allen acquisition. Like, the Bears are pretty good, and Caleb's pretty good. And when you put a pretty good quarterback on a pretty good roster, man, expectations leap up.
Oh, God, that's adorable.
It's adorable.
He's really smart, and I enjoy him a lot and enjoy that Ringer draft pod. I've been checking it out, but I missed that. That is adorable. It sounds a lot like Danny Parkins, frankly.
Oh.
Just letting himself dream and get excited.
Yeah, I get it.
And envisioning a year one quarterback being the best one in the history of the franchise.
It's
easy to envision, frankly.
It's in play.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not in play?
Of course it is.
It feels in play to me. It feels in play. I was on Kevin Clark's show today. His This Is Football show. It was talking about reasonable expected outcomes of Caleb Williams. The low end outcomes for year one are pretty good. Like, take a quarterback and just say, all right, there were struggles, there were moments. It wasn't like Andrew Luck's rookie year was 23 touchdowns and 18 interceptions. Took over 40 sacks. Like, that's not that good.
No.
But he threw for 4,300 yards and they won 11 games.
Yeah, it's 18 picks.
Is a ton of picks?
Is a ton of picks. Is a learning curve.
Peyton Manning threw a ton of picks. Mm-hmm. You know, so
Oh, I've got those files. I've got the numbers on bad rookie years by quarterbacks. We've had to research those in recent vintage as we try and talk ourselves into the possibility of progressions. I don't think that's what we're going to end up looking at, though, here.
A bunch of interceptions?
Yeah.
Well, he's never thrown a bunch of interceptions. He's had bad fumble years and bad fumbling stretches. He's never been a big turnover guy. But people are going to have trouble conflating these things, but like, there's going to be mistakes. CJ Stroud's rookie year,
is such a crazy outlier on the low end for interceptions. I think it was, what, 5 interceptions all year? Mm. That's completely ridiculous. Herbert's great year was 31 touchdowns, 10 picks. You'd sign up for 10 picks right now for Caleb Williams and not even think twice about it. I don't know how much he'll throw the ball into harm's way, but these guys, DJ Moore's productive with everybody that he plays with.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen will get open. He can make the Keenan Allen throws, the short area quickness right by the line of scrimmage throws, and get him up. You know, like, these guys just give him a pretty damn high floor in terms of first year production. Don't laugh at me. Don't smile at me.
I'm not laughing.
Don't smile at my optimism.
No.
You want to debate. You want to be cynical.
I don't. Maybe you want me to.
No.
I don't.
That was a wry smile.
It was a wry smile because I can absolutely see it happening. I can absolutely see it happening because it makes sense. You feel like you've got a GM who has been setting everything up, has been setting up a nest in spite of perhaps the best interests overall of Justin Fields. He has been setting up the organizational nest to drop a quarterback into, and the good fortune ended up delivering him this particular quarterback. And it's just freaking remarkable. It's the kind of happenstance you dream of. It's the kind of thing that makes Jed Hoyer bring it up and say, yeah, that one worked out pretty well. Like a guy to be able to look across sports and say, oh, wow, that trade worked out pretty well, because it's just freaking remarkable. So, no, it's hard for me to imagine it not working early on because of the nest that is being prepared and because of how good this kid is. And it's why people get excited. It's why Ben Solak's voice jumps higher still. You know,
than we even thought it could go,
because you start to envision it, and it's a pretty low bar to begin with, and it just makes all the sense in the world that you're picturing very good things happening.
Have you had any more thought on who the best quarterback, like who the highest rated quarterback is to bust? You know, all these guys get grades before the draft as prospects. I want to know who the highest graded guy is who straight up busted, not who underachieved.
Yeah. I don't think we can call Jameis Winston a bust. I wonder what the definition is of that, because that is a guy who's still in the league now, still has a backup and still present. He's got a 30-touchdown season.
I think it also came with 30 interceptions, though.
Yes, it did.
One of the craziest seasons ever.
He's the Ronald Acuna Jr. of the NFL with 30 years. Absolutely. But that wasn't a 5,000-yard season, was
it? No. That
was close.
Oh, no, it was.
Was it 5,000?
Yeah, it was. 5,100 yards, 33 touchdowns, 30 picks on 60% completion.
Ooh, that's low.
That's a crazy Bruce Arians, we're just going to throw the ball 600-plus times a year kind of season.
Yeah.
That's a weird season.
Yeah, it is a weird season. And if that's the good one, maybe as a one overall, you do call that a bust. But it's not.
But to your point,
it's not a Jamarcus Russell-level bust. It's not a Ryan Leaf-level bust.
No, it's 5 years with the Bucs. It's 4 years with the Saints. It's 141 passing touchdowns, 22,000 passing yards.
I mean,
it's a real career.
Yeah, it's a real bona fide NFL career.
But that's a pretty good answer.
Because he
obviously did not live up to being the number one overall pick. God, I forgot that was a 5,000-yard season. I'd watch a 20-minute documentary on the 2019 Jameis Winston season.
And he was a different caliber of number one overall quarterback than Jamarcus Russell. You know, it's like than Baker Mayfield. Jameis was thought to have a higher floor than those guys. He was thought to have been in the catalog, wasn't he? Like, in terms of what the representation would be, because that's what we need, is a ranking of those one overall quarterbacks.
Yeah, maybe I'll text Matt Miller. Not like he's not busy or anything, getting ready for the biggest 2-day stretch of his career and life. But
he knows everything already.
Yeah, I know
those guys have already done all the research.
But I'll text him and say, like, who? Because my working theory is that the guys who are graded anywhere around where Caleb is, they don't bust. They may be underachieved, but they don't bust. And then when you factor in how good the team is around him, it's what puts this into a situation where it feels like the floor is very, very, very high.
Yeah. I'm curious to look back and find out how highly Tim Couch was thought of as a true stud quarterback prospect, not merely the best of his class.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a loaded class, obviously, with Donovan McNabb and the Bears with Cade McNown and Dante Culpepper and Achilles Smith. Yeah. There's a ton of them.
Yeah, my guess would be Ryan Leaf, but I don't know. I'll ask Matt Miller and see if I can have an answer on it.
The best of the quarterback prospects who busted.
Yeah, who is the highest rated prospect to bust? If you missed our conversation with Jed, it's coming up in about 10 minutes. We still have some Cubs tickets to give away. Be listening for the Michael Bush home run. Draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. People can also listen to the rewind feature and go back and check out the whole conversation with Nico Horner. He's an interesting guy to interview because he's very comfortable with us, and he's got a dry sense of humor, and he's very smart baseball-wise, but he doesn't love talking about himself when it's positive. I feel like when we're talking about something negative with him, he has no problem taking accountability and saying he gets to get better. But last night was the Nico Horner game, and I don't know how – did you feel like – I mean, I feel like he was like, it was really fun, it was awesome, but I did get a sense of genuine – like, all right, guys, come on. How much more are we going to talk about me?
Yeah.
Are we going to keep talking about me and that awesome hit that I had and that awesome base running?
Actually, I didn't feel that as much. I went there with you because it was fun to needle him on it a little bit. And he has had that, but...
Maybe I'm projecting about how I feel like I know that that's just not his favorite parts of the interviews is when we're talking, like, trying to get him to brag on himself.
I think he needed that game, man.
That was my working theory.
I think he really, really needed it. And that joy after he crossed home plate with a wonderful bit of aggressive base running and just kind of sensing it as he crossed home plate, he's like, I just tied up this damn game. The level of exuberance was high, but also he's looked uncomfortable at the plate. And I know we asked Craig Counsell about it on Friday. He said, oh, no, he's the same guy. Hasn't looked like the same guy to me. Has looked awkward. And we asked him directly, like, is there a change in approach? You were on it and asked about it last week. I asked this week about, like, your numbers are down in terms of swinging outside the zone. Is that conscience? But a lot of people out there are writing about it and seeing what appears to be a different approach under a new manager, taking more pitches, swinging a little bit less. And then I don't think it's a coincidence that after he scores that run to tie the game, he does a classic Nico bit of C-ball swing hit ball at an incredibly high pitch out of the zone for the game winner two innings later. You know, like once you get a little more comfortable, then do whatever the hell you want and trust yourself a little bit more. And it looked like that's what happened in the next at bat, if you ask me.
Yeah, he was... very self-aware, though, the next day that that's not something that he's supposed to. So, yeah, next time that'll be a take.
Uh-huh.
Next time that'll be a take.
Hey, man.
Or not.
Kirby Puckett had an incredible career doing that. Vlad Guerrero Sr. had an incredible career doing that.
I don't think he's those guys.
That's why they're asking him to do it less.
Right.
He's not those guys.
Yeah. But even if he didn't need it, Nico fans needed it. He's so likable. And they really had been struggling with the bat. And for as good as the offense has been at putting up crooked numbers, he was he kind of came through last night. That felt like a stolen win.
And he has not once taken offensive troubles out to the dish, or out to the field, I should say. Offensive troubles, he does bring those to the dish. Brings those directly to the dish. That's where they go to live.
If you missed Jed Hoyer, it's great. It's coming up next. I hope to see many of you at Rinaldi's in Lincoln Park coming up at 6 o'clock. But Jed Hoyer, first comments on the Seiya Suzuki injury, the crazy game from last night, and how they're going to balance Kyle Hendricks and how many more times they can bring him out there, among other things, with the Cubs president next on The Score.
Jed's in charge. I'm going on a bender.
Jed Hoyer.
People care so much about the Cubs. It's an honor to work for a team where the fans care that much.
Chicago Cubs president of baseball operations.
Jed Hoyer, man, what a story that is.
World Series champion general manager.
The key to this whole operation is going to be building that scouting and player development machine. The Cubs way.
A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series.
Jed Hoyer.
My thought on Craig, as I've always watched him against us, was the Bum Phillips quote where he says,
he can take his'ns and beat yourn's. And when he beats yourn's,
Okay, he can take yourns and beat hisns.
There's nothing wrong with Nico Horner. Nico's just got to keep grinding and all the hits are going to come.
Line drive, base hit, right field. Grichik up with it. Only one will score. And it is 3-2. The Cubs with the lead as Nico comes through.
Cubs win the ball game. And a big win for this Cubs ball club as they beat the Diamondbacks by a score of 3-2. What a ball game.
Jed Hoyer with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Love whenever we get to talk to the president of the Cubs, Jed Hoyer, on the Parkinson Spiegel Show. He's with us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Jed, thank you for the time, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well. I don't know if you know or remember, but we have Nico Horner on the show weekly. He was just on about 30 minutes ago. And yeah, and we told him that last night we're dubbing it the Nico game. I think that's a signature game for him.
No, he was great. And we didn't swing the bats at all, really, that whole game. And frankly, we've been struggling on this whole trip. And it was, we needed a kind of a random play like the, scoring from second in the ninth. And then obviously, like the big hit he came up with, we needed that big hit. So yeah, he sparked us last night. And, you know, he's been scuffling a little bit to start the year. But I almost think sometimes it's a positive that, you know, there's going to be guys that are hot and guys are cold at the same time. And I know that when some of these other guys cool off, I know Nico will get hot. And it's kind of nice to have that because it's sort of a matter of time until he gets going.
Are you worried about the offense overall? You mentioned it's been scuffling, but I also feel like the quality of the bats have been good. And some guys have been aggressive as they should be in the zone. Like it seemed to be functioning well, if not scoring well recently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I mean, obviously Saya's injury is one that's going to take a little bit of a toll on the offense, given how he was swinging it and, you know, where he was hitting in the lineup. But, you know, I feel like in general, I totally agree. I felt like, you know, through the Dodgers series, it felt like our at-bats were really good and we were getting results. And, you know, I've seen it a lot of times. Teams go on the West Coast and, you know, for whatever reason, they struggle a little bit. And, you know, we've had a number of guys on this trip that just haven't really hit, but yeah, my concern level is zero. It's just, I just think it's a slump on the West Coast. And, you know, fortunately we've been able to win these last three games without scoring a ton. And so, you know, eventually we'll get the offense going and they'll pick up the pitchers a little bit.
You know, actually, I'm sorry. One more thing on Nico. He said that you guys have a swing decision metric. I already forgot what he called it. It was 15 minutes ago, but he said, you know, that swing on the hit that drove in the game winning run, it's going to grade out poorly, but what's it called? What goes into that, basically? Just decisions within the zone?
Yeah, well, it's both, right? You want to make good decisions outside the zone. You want to swing it, you know, not swing at balls. But, like, you know, if you let a 1-0 fastball right down the middle, you let that go, that's a bad decision, right? And I think it's important to recognize both, and that's what we try to do, which is, you know, you want guys to be aggressive in the zone. You want guys to, you know, not be aggressive outside the zone. And so we grade that stuff out. And, you know, I love the fact that he references that because it's something that we, you know, take a lot of pride in. And it's something that I think we've done, you know, a really good job of so far this year. And that just only benefits you as you go, right? You grind down other pitchers, you make good decisions. And I just clicked on it right now. According to how we rank it, we're still, you know, the top team in the National League that way. So it is important to us, and hopefully we can keep on having at-bats like that.
So how's Christopher Morel been doing in that particular metric? Looked real good to start, but I think it's 0 for his last 18. First of all, physically, is he okay? It looked like the finger or the knuckle was an issue, and then 0 for 18 since he hurt it.
Yeah, I don't know if they're, you know, if it's coincidental or not. I think it bothered him a little bit. Obviously, he hit the ball last night really hard and got really unlucky. You know, he could have been a hero last night with that ball he hit to left. But we have a number of guys that have been struggling on this trip. And I think that when you look at Chris, I think he's, you know, below 20% strikeout rate still, which is really good for him. And kind of just a matter of time until he gets hot again.
So we're talking to Jed Hoyer here on The Score, and you mentioned it earlier, and we should talk a little bit more about it. How does this Saya oblique injury, I know it's left v. right, but like, how does it compare to the last one?
Unclear. You know, I think that it was, you know, last time, I think it was more on one swing. This one kind of crept up on us a little bit. He says it wasn't on one swing, but you know, hopefully he can heal quickly and get back. The time frame last year is a little hard to figure because he did it right before the first spring training game last year, which means he had no buildup, he had no at bats, and so we had to take it a little bit longer last year with the rehab because he needed a spring training. So the hope is that, you know, ideally he would come back a little quicker than last year's timetable. But yeah, we're gonna have to play without him for a little while. And he was really coming into his own over the, you know, really since the middle of last year, and, you know, looked great in spring training and looked great at the beginning of the year. And, you know, there's no reason to think he won't come back that way. But in the meantime, we have a hole in the lineup that we have to fix.
Obliques can linger and be challenging. Is there anything to learn from the process of getting him back last year for him this year?
Is the other one? Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think we'll be having a lot of debates and a lot of discussions about, you know, sort of what led to it, because, you know, last year was the other side, and, you know, is there something about how he trains or something about him physically, or, you know, something about something we're doing? But yeah, certainly it's something we're going to look at and take seriously, because it's the second oblique in the last year. And, you know, we have to make sure we can keep this guy healthy.
Was there any other player you considered other than Canario? Did PCA or Owen Casey hit your mind?
No, I mean, I think, Canario was the right guy. I feel like we need some presence against left-handed pitching. And obviously, you know, Wisdom is a guy who's also in AAA, who's, you know, rehabbing and on his way back. And hopefully, you know, he can, keep doing what he's doing in Iowa, and he can be an option at some point as well. But yeah, Canario was sort of the obvious choice.
So Jed, I know that this,
follow on that. I mean, I do think that's one of the things we're excited about. I think as the year goes on, our hope is that, you know, some of these prospects will feel ready and will make some of those decisions. I think early on in the season, we're probably more likely to rely on the guys on the 40-man roster and let those guys play and let those guys develop. But, you know, at some point, the hope is that when we have that kind of injury, then that can be an opportunity for a prospect that we've been kind of holding off the roster.
You know, we're so used to dealing with, oh, there's all those prospects down there, but you got to be patient. But I don't know if, to your point, what you're saying, this is a year that begs for those guys to get an aggressive call up if they fit. I mean, we've already seen it with Brown. It's not off the table that we might see who? Shaw, Casey, PCA, any of these guys during the course of the year, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you have to do the right thing by the player. You know, I think that, you know, clearly rushing guys, I think, can have a negative impact. And obviously if you do that, they're also not going to help the team, you know, either. So I think we have to be careful with that. But certainly we have a number of prospects that have spent a lot of time in the minors that have developed. And, you know, I think if they continue to play well, I think, yes, I think that becomes an option. And, you know, you mentioned Ben Brown. I mean, that's we optioned him in spring training and told him, you know, to be the guy when something happened. And unfortunately, you know, five innings into our season, we had the injury to Steele, and he was the obvious guy. So, you know, every day you sort of look at trade rumors or look at the email that goes around with all the roster moves on a given day. And every day there's a good player that gets injured around the big leagues. And sometimes it's your player, and that's just the game, right? You know, if you take any one player off the team and you're not a good team, then that's the fault of your depth. And that's kind of how I try to look at it, that, you know, we have to have, you know, players that can step in for everybody. You don't like to lose anyone, but like, if you do lose them, we have to have the depth to withstand that. And, you know, the Saya injury and the Steele injury, those, and the Merriweather injury, those are good challenges for us as a team early in the season.
All right, so settle a debate for us that we had the day after opening day. Spieg said you guys were definitely having internal conversations about trades. I was like, no, it's way too soon. They won't do that. Who was right?
Yeah, no one really trades that early in the season.
I think
it's something you talk about. You kind of ask who's available.
That's what I'm saying. You brought it up. You're sitting there talking about it. Whether people are available or not is a different question, Jed.
Sounds like Parkins was right on.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, you always talk about it, but the fact is that in my experience, it's just so unbelievably rare for someone to make a trade in April or even in May. It usually takes a while into the season before any trade of any significance happens. And so usually when you leave spring training, you're thinking this is, at least the first 2 or 3 months, this is our group, in the minors and in the big leagues. And the external stuff, other than waiver claims and small things, it takes a while.
See, we have this image of you as the crazy aggressive one in the front office conversations, because last year we brought up to Carter Hawkins down the stretch, have you thought about Cade Horton in relief? He looked at us and he said, who are you, Jed? Like, so we think that you're the guy who's like, well, let's trade for Shane Bieber. It's day two, Jet. We can't do this yet. Does that fit your profile, though? Are you a little more aggressive than Carter?
Well, he's very, very long player development background. So I think that, he's always going to take that position, which is great, because, I do think that, like I said, I think there's real damage that can be done if you grab a guy too early. But he would agree. Ben Brown's a guy. Certainly, you look at him and you think, okay, you give him a bunch of starts in AAA to start the season. But that wasn't an option. And I'm so impressed with how he bounced back after that second inning in Texas. That was, he got killed, and then to bounce back and have 3 good starts, it shows some real resilience. And that's the kind of experience you just can't get in the minor leagues. And he's getting that, in real time right now, which is wonderful.
We're talking to Jed Hoyer. We've talked to you about Kyle Hendricks so much over the years. I think you said that he is your favorite player that you've interacted with the Cubs, or that you've never had a negative interaction. Everybody loves him, obviously. Does that make it more difficult when he's struggling, when your job is to be dispassionate and put the best guys out there?
Yeah, yes. I literally the lowest maintenance employee/teammate I've ever had. He's incredible, and just a joy to be around. And I think you look at his career, I think he's just made the most of what he had over and over and over. And, I feel like he's had his times of struggles in the past, and he's gotten through them. And, my hope is that this is another one of those times. I feel like the third time through the order has really bitten him so far this year. And that's something obviously he's going to have to work through. He's also faced Rangers, Dodgers, Padres, which I think has been a tough slate for him early in the season. But yeah, he's obviously, he would say it, and he expects more of himself, and obviously we expect him to pitch well. But I think there's, we have to remember we're 3 starts into his season. He's got, what is he, 29 more probably. So I think that giving him a little bit of leeway and time to work his way through it, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I try to remember over and over that, the things we think about in April and the things that we talk about in April, like, so oftentimes by June, let alone August, seem so remote. So that's hopefully how I'm looking at this, rough 3 starts, that you look up and it was clearly a bad patch, and then he got going again and pitched really well.
So it's interesting because Assad has ended up in the rotation, and now Brown has ended up in the rotation. I wondered if Craig Counsell may have been a guy who utilized pitchers in bulk. We'd gotten so used to that as a philosophy. Now we've seen Keegan Thompson with 2 straight multiple inning appearances. Do you think Craig would have done things differently if he had bulk guys available in the bullpen to this point?
Yeah, I think to your point, and we've talked about that a lot. Like, we just haven't had those options yet because of the injury to Steele and the injury to Italian. Two of the guys that we might have used in those roles have had to, both those guys have had to, pitch in the rotation. So, listen, I hope at some point we get to a place where all of our guys are healthy. And when that happens, we'll have some good but difficult decisions. But I also know well enough to know that, like, we may never get to that point of perfect health, but that's why you build up the depth. But yes, I think if we ever do get to that point, I think that they're probably, there'll be a lot of creative options discussed, because I do think that, in baseball 2024, there's a real risk of just, if every night you're getting 12 outs out of, 4 different relievers, you do that over and over and over, like, there's just going to be a real negative impact on those guys over time. And so you have to find ways to either get more length out of your starters, or to use guys in bulk that can take the weight off those guys. So, and you have to still win games while you do that.
So it is Julio Teheran, who's now in the minors. Is that a rotation option that would help you have one of those guys as a bulk person in the bullpen? Is that appetizing on that level?
Yeah, that's why you sign a guy like that, is that potentially he could be put in a role like that. So yeah, that's why. I mean, we was trying to build up as much depth as possible. And like I said, every day someone goes down somewhere in baseball, and you just got to be able to be able to handle it. And I think so far we've handled the injury to Talian and Steele well, but we have to keep expecting, more. And obviously, like you said, like those Brown and Assad are two good examples. You know, Teron's a good example of guys I think can help us in bulk.
Would Jed Hoyer like to take this opportunity to say, "I told you so" on Michael Bush?
I don't know. It's April 16th, but I am really, I'm happy for him. I think a guy that, he's in such a great organization with the Dodgers. They had so many bats. He's a guy that, probably in most organizations would have been up, if not all, late in 22 or, all of last year. And, he was in that organization and kind of blocked. And so, I feel really good for him that he's kind of gotten this opportunity. And so far he's run with it. He's had really good at bats. He's homered against some really good pitchers. And hopefully he continues to build on this. I mean, obviously what he's doing right now is really special, but I think even taking away the power surge, I just think he's conducted really professional at bats all season.
So what's the difference between him and somebody else who has also conquered AAA and doesn't necessarily have it compute to the next level? What's the difference?
I don't want to spike the football on Michael Bush. I think that there's I do feel like there's, again, we've played, a limited number of games so far to say that. But I do think that, like I said, his decision-making is excellent. And I think that really does go a long way. We see him take that bat against Jarvis last night in extra innings and draw that walk. I mean, that's an impressive walk in a big situation to have the calmness to take that pitch below the zone. Those are the kind of takes he's had and the kind of things that we identified that we say that, I think there's a lot of reasons why he should hit in the major leagues. And I think, in baseball now, I think there's a lot like the gap between the minors and the big leagues is bigger than ever before. The stuff in the major leagues is so good. And so there are players you're trying to figure out, like, is this guy's performance in the minor leagues going to translate when, all the stuff is better and, everything is magnified. And I do think that the ability to make good decisions is a big part of why it does translate for some guys.
Tell you what, I enjoyed hearing Jed Hoyer from earlier in the show in the background while I played Golden Tee. Golden Tee is celebrating its 35th anniversary, and we have it now here in the Scores studio. It is just absolutely incredible. And this home version that we have in the Scores studio is the same version that you can purchase for your home or business. So go to goldentea.com to figure out how you could purchase that game for your home arcade or your home business. And in general, try to get better at Golden Tee so you can battle Shane Reardon, who is the absolute king of the Score Studios.
He's
right
a
now.
Monster.
He is, isn't he?
But he's also a very generous and helpful coach and teacher.
Oh, wow.
He was
wow.
helping me out. I'd never played before. Played with him Friday.
That's lovely.
He just obliterated me.
Yeah, but I'm not here to gatekeep Golden Tee. I want everyone to be good so I have competition.
That's understandable. That's understandable. Well, look, Danny's gone, but I see what he left behind. It's not a book. He brought that. He's going to sign it over at Rinaldi's, but it is the bow, and I'm going to use it next on the